Good morning. I'm glad you're with us here on Maryland Morning. On 88.1, I'm Sheila Cast. Maryland has a reputation for being tough when it comes to gun control. As of last year, Maryland outlaws 45 kinds of assault rifles, bans magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, and requires strict background checks before citizens can buy guns. But the director of the Center for Gun Policy and Research at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, Daniel Webster, does not consider Maryland's gun laws as strict as that may sound. He's convening a series of seminars on gun control over the next few weeks, starting with one today at noon. Daniel Webster joins me on the phone. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sheila.
Also joining us by phone is Attorney General-elect Brian Frosch, a panelist in this afternoon seminar. He has chaired the Judicial Proceedings Committee in the Maryland Senate for 12 years. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And Lauren Beraldi, chief of the Gun Violence Task Force for the District Attorney in Philadelphia. She'll be in Baltimore for the panel and joins us by phone now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Daniel Webster, why do you say Maryland's gun laws are not as strict as their press coverage might imply?
When you look deeper into our laws and some of the laws that are what I consider pretty critical to prevent the diversion of guns to criminals and other prohibited people, they're not all that strong in important ways.
In what way?
Well, it's not so easy to actually convict someone for failure to comply with background check laws. There are a variety of things that prosecutors have to prove that the gun was a permanent transfer as opposed to a temporary loan. They have to, importantly, actually prove a willful violation.
You're
of
talking
the law.
Now, if I understand correctly, you're talking about what we generally call straw purchases, where
yes,
somebody buys a gun and it ends up in the hands of someone who would not be eligible to purchase a gun.
That's exactly right. Yes, and that's really what's so critical and what we've been striving for a number of years to get the right kind of policies in place.
Well, is it only a violation of law on the part of the original purchaser if the intent at the time of purchase was to transfer the gun to an ineligible purchaser? Or is it ever legal for someone to buy a gun and hand it over to somebody else?
Well, in Maryland, when you're talking about a transfer of a handgun, you're required by law to only transfer in instances in which the purchaser has passed a background check. And that is the part of the law that I think is the weakest in terms of relatively high standards for conviction. And when you get a conviction, it's only a misdemeanor. And so we don't see many cases prosecuted. When there are prosecutions and convictions, very rarely do you see much consequences.
Lauren Beraldi from the Philadelphia Prosecutor's Office, you had its gun violence task force. Are straw purchases a problem in Philadelphia?
Yes, straw purchases are actually the reason that the gun violence task force was created back in 2007. It is a collaboration between the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office, the Philadelphia Police Department, and the State Attorney General's Office. And we have 18 agents from the State Attorney General's Office who are tasked with investigating straw purchases. So we've, for the past 7 years, have been working on this problem in Philadelphia.
Do you think you have a handle on it?
I think we're working on the problem in Philadelphia. I mean, it is very difficult to prove. I mean, we rely on our gun store owners who have a very good relationship with our agents, to make phone calls and say, hey, look, something doesn't seem right with how this purchase is going down. We investigate every gun that's recovered in Philadelphia by the Philadelphia Police Department. That information is passed off to our agents, and they run checks on those guns, and they track down the gun owners, and they take investigations from there. So I would say that we're in a lot different position than we were 7 years ago. We have great partnerships with gun stores, which is something that had never happened before. But to say that the problem no longer exists would not be a fair statement.
Brian Frosch, as committee chair, you played a big role in shaping the Firearm Safety Act last year. Do you think there's a big hole in it?
Well, I think it is difficult to prove the crime of being a straw purchaser. But we did a couple of things in the Firearm Safety Act, the law we passed last year, to reduce straw purchasers. First, what we did was we said anybody who wants to purchase a handgun must get a license, and to get the license, you must give your fingerprints to the state police. That's proved to be a very strong deterrent in other states that have similar requirements, and I'm talking about New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut. They have lower rates of gun violence and gun deaths than do states that are similar demographically. So we expect that will reduce straw purchases. In addition, we gave our state police authority to oversee the sales through gun dealers, to look at their inventories, to look at their sales, and to determine whether they are selling to people who are disqualified or whether they're selling to people who end up transferring their purchases to people who are disqualified. So in combination, I think those two pieces of the legislation that we passed will reduce straw purchasers. That said, you know, we did not strengthen the part of the bill that you described, the part of the law that you described earlier that makes it only a misdemeanor and that has the high standard of having to prove that the transfer to somebody without the qualification to own a gun must be willful.
Lauren Baraldi, I read that Philadelphia just put a mother behind bars for 6 to 13 years for supplying her criminal son with a gun, which sounds pretty tough. Is there something about the law in Pennsylvania that's tougher than what we have here?
Right. So Delaware County District Attorney's Office prosecuted a 22-year-old woman by the name of Stacy Dawson, and she was providing handguns to her boyfriend, a man by the name of David Colon. But we have a mandatory attached to straw purchases, whereby if you purchase two or more guns and illegally transfer them, it's a 5 to 10 year mandatory. If you even purchasing one gun is itself a felony, which I believe is different than what you see there in Maryland. They're very difficult cases in that if you are purchasing a gun, by definition, you do not have a record. So you're looking at, you know, a 20-year-old woman with a 3-year-old child who just went to jail for 6 to 12 years last week because she purchased two firearms for her boyfriend who was not eligible to carry in Pennsylvania because of his prior convictions.
On WIPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Lauren Baraldi from the District Attorney's Office in Philadelphia. She's part of a seminar series that begins this afternoon in Baltimore. We're also talking to Daniel Webster, director of the Center for Gun Policy and Research at Johns Hopkins University, and with Attorney General-elect Brian Frosch. Brian Frosch, if we can't effectively stop straw purchases, do the background checks in the 2013 law even mean anything? Because we're not actually checking the person holding the gun.
Well, we are. I mean, in the law we passed last year, you want to buy a gun, you must have the background checks, and the ability to do the background checks is enhanced by the fact that you have to give your fingerprints to the state police in order to get the license to buy it. So, yes, I mean,
But if straw purchases happen, I mean, I get what the regulatory regime is, but I don't understand what keeps somebody from buying a gun, waiting a plausible number of months and saying, somebody stole my gun. And then when that gun shows up in somebody else's hands, the purchasers, how do you enforce that?
Well, two things. We in the same law, we made it, we require people who have lost, who have had a gun stolen or lost to report it to the police. And it's a crime if they don't. If you're determined to get around this law and to transfer a gun illegally to somebody who is not qualified to own one, if you plan long enough in advance and if you jump through all the hoops, you can probably get away with it. But keep in mind, the fact that you have to go to the state police and give them your fingerprints first seems to work as a deterrent in the states that already have that requirement.
Daniel Webster, Vinnie DeMarco, the head of Marylanders to Prevent Gun Violence, argues that the 2013 law in Maryland is powerful because the murder rate in Maryland dropped by almost 1/4 in the first 7 months of this year. Is that persuasive to you?
Well, it's my business to study such things. And while I see that very encouraging, I need to see longer-term trends to have a better sense that this is not a sort of a short-term blip, and also do some comparative analysis to see the degree to which Maryland's reductions are truly different than trends going on in other states. I think Maryland made a huge step forward with its law in 2013. I do think that we will have even more effective laws if we can create a deterrent through successful prosecutions.
Lauren Baraldi, from what I've read, your gun violence task force in Philadelphia is about three times the size of the one in Baltimore. Is manpower a key to getting guns off the street?
Manpower and experience. The agents that work on our task force are all retired Philadelphia Police Department homicide detectives. That has really been the key to our successful prosecutions. The majority of our cases, the detectives are able to get statements and provide us with an extraordinary amount of evidence, which makes it therefore very easy to prosecute. I mean, we have an over 85% merit-based prosecution statistics for this unit over the past 7 years, and that is because of the agents that we work with and because of the experience and what they bring to the table.
Brian Frosch, let me turn to you for a political judgment. Republican Larry Hogan was endorsed by the National Rifle Association and has refused to disclose how he filled out the NRA questionnaire to get that endorsement. There's speculation on the left that he will name a superintendent of state police who might be lax in enforcing the Firearm Safety Act. What are you expecting?
Well, what I'm hoping for is that Governor-elect Hogan said that he was not going to seek to undermine the law, and that he will help enforce it and maintain it. I think it's a great opportunity for us in Maryland to save lives and prevent injuries with guns.
Daniel Webster, the Democrat in that race, Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, campaigned against Hogan as a threat to gun safety, and voters chose Hogan. Does that give him a mandate?
I don't think so at all. I don't think many people believe that Mr. Hogan won the election because of his position on guns. He certainly wasn't campaigning on guns. He was campaigning on taxes and other issues. So I think it would be a real stretch to infer that he has any sort of mandate as it relates to weakening Maryland's gun laws.
Well, I appreciate you all talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Daniel Webster is director of the Center for Gun Policy and Research at the Bloomberg School of Public Health. Lauren Baraldi is chief of the Gun Violence Task Force for the District Attorney in Philadelphia. And Brian Frosch will leave the State Senate in January to become Maryland's Attorney General. The seminar series, Challenges and Opportunities to Enforcing Maryland's Gun Law, begins at noon today at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. We've got more information, including a link to find out about four more seminars scheduled in the next 3 weeks. I'm Sheila Cass. There's more ahead on Maryland Morning. Stay with us on 88.1.